ya lo hace, pierna derecha, directo al arco, golazo, golazo.
The world of football with a soccer perspective. This is Soccer Today with Dwayne Mullins and Kevin Larame, live on the Sports Podcasting Network.
Good day, good night, and welcome to Soccer Today for Wednesday, November 21st, 2018. I'm Kevin Larame, joined as always by Dwayne Mullins. Dwayne, good morning.
Good morning. I've been so overwhelmed by learning the space bar trick on my iPhone that I didn't have to put my fingers on the screen to move the cursor around, and I just have to move it on the space bar. Blew my mind. The iPhone is full of surprises, Kevin. Full of surprises.
Welcome to 2014, Dwayne.
Hey, this was making its rounds on Twitter the other day, and I wasn't the only one that was confused by this feature. I thought I had to like move, and it was so frustrating. You're trying to move it, and yeah, you're just in space, but it's much easier. Anyway, yeah, welcome to 2014 with my new technology.
Yeah, I'm not an iPhone guy. I've been a Samsung Galaxy guy for a few phones now, and yeah, I like it. So now that the phone tech talk is done, well, let's move.
That's for another podcast.
That's for our tech podcast that won't exist anytime soon, because we'll be talking about two different things. I'll be talking about something happening now, and Blake will be talking about something that he just learned about 3 years ago. But USA versus Italy yesterday, a 1-0 win for Italy. Empolitano scored in the 94th minute for the game winner for Italy. Yeah, that game was what? Was there any use to this game outside of finishing the year for the United States and finishing their 2018 year in a lackluster way, which they had a lackluster 2018, to be quite fair.
It was so diddly, really, but
true, certainly very true.
Yeah, look, was there any use to this game? I mean, that's a question. Is there any use to life? Is there any use to the sport? I mean, we're getting philosophical here. It was a friendly. And the U.S., you know, a lot of U.S. fans feel very strongly that they're being, the option to play these friendlies is being taken away from them by virtue of having to play in the CONCACAF Nations League next year. First off, what I'd say to that is that I think that the CONCACAF Nations League will be better off for the U.S. men's national team at this particular juncture in their history. That's number one. I think it's important, especially if you're bloody new kids, and certainly they did a lot of that yesterday, although this was very much an experimental lineup for sure that the U.S. put out there. Not a lot of players that I think – this looked like a Camp Cupcake lineup, to be honest. It's typically what you'd see there, a lot of MLS players, a lot of players that they're sort of just looking at to see whether they might have a role for depth down the line. The only difference is that, you know, it's not really fair to call Camp Cupcake when the entire year has been cupcake since the World Cup, right? So nonetheless, is there any use to the game? I guess. There's use to all friendlies, is particularly in North America where you don't get a chance to play these teams very often, but they're going to increasingly become rarer because the European teams aren't going to want to play them as much because they're not going to have as much opportunity to play them. And with all due respect to the United States, I don't think they're going to be quite the draw that other teams they can play in those friendlies are going to be within the few friendly opportunities that they're going to have remaining to them. So it's going to be a challenge for the U.S. to book these moving forward. But I don't think I'm going to miss them. A lot of U.S. fans, I think it's sexy, I get, to play the Azzurri and to see those strips out there, to play England at Wembley. I get that. As a Canadian fan, I'm jealous of that a little bit. But at the same time, realistically, I think it's going to benefit the U.S. a lot more to play competitive games against hungry Central American teams so that you don't have slip-ups. Yes, you're better than them. You are. You should have qualified for the World Cup last summer, not just by the fact that you should have, but you were better. You were better than Trinidad on the day, but stuff happened. Maybe you play a few more games in Trinidad so that players are used to that if they aren't just going in on huge, huge, huge stake moments, and it might be better off for them. But yesterday, Kevin, we're not really talking about the game because it was a cluster. You know what? Like, the U.S. looked terrible.
Yeah. What I'm wondering is, example, even if it's friendlies, we'll get onto the coaching situation in a second. And yes, the United States, U.S. men's national team, still does not have a manager. Sirachan is still the interim. And it was interesting, too, because you have the coach of Italy that has been confirmed, and he's playing the kids too, but he's learning things about his kids, and eventually will learn how to use them properly in a game managing situation, and he's going to be able to improve the team because of what he learned in friendlies and in other games. But the U.S. men's national team, eventually there's going to be a manager being named, and whatever Surechan learned, the notes are going to be passed over, but I'm not sure the next one will follow those notes, so you're probably going to have wasted time. That's how I see this year. It's like a limbo year. It's like a just time froze. There's game being played, but there's no progression in this year, at least on the player development versus the manager and the confidence that they can get from the manager. This year, this is a wasted year for that.
You know, as you say, like Mancini can put some kids out and get some information from that. Certainly, he probably did get a lot of good, because Italy dominated that game. They had no bite up top, which has kind of been their problem, and they could have, you know, Horvat played very well. He was the only U.S. player to stand out, and when your keeper is your only player standing out, you know that there's some problems in the game. But you know, as I said, as you say, Mancini, he certainly could to get something from this, whereas the U.S. is just treading water right now. I'm going to say this very carefully, Kevin, because I want to be clear that Canada is not more talented than the United States right now overall, for sure. But I feel better off as the Canadian program right now than I would be as a U.S. fan, simply because at least the Canadian program had direction and had purpose this year. Those games may not look exciting on paper against St. Kitts and Nevis and that, but they're competitive games, and they're working towards something. They're trying to compete towards something. There are legitimately looking at players in environments that, though you're not getting as much pushback from your opposition, they are competitive environments. I think there is a better direction, more direction, period, in the Canadian program right now than there is in the American program. And I have not been able to say that in a long, long time. And it's a relevant comparison for this show because, well, that's kind of what we do. We are Canadians looking down at the United States and judging what happens. Very much observing our sphere. So, yes. This is a rare situation where I feel that we're in better shape. And in the U.S., the quicker they can get playing competitive games, the quicker they can get a coach in place, the better off. And, you know, the coaching situation, we're all wondering, and there are some rumors out there that I tweeted out a little bit, well, one this morning, that Greg Berhalter might not be the man. And they're turning people down, and I think Greg Berhalter was the man. I just don't know whether they're able to. They're not closing right now, to use a sales term. They're not closing this deal, and it could come down to here. I'll just put the rumor out there that suggested that the Galaxy, because they obviously made a change in the general manager position, which leaves Dom Kinnear sort of in a strange situation of whether or not they want to continue on with him or whether they want to change direction completely. Berhalter, you know, there's some opportunity for him to move right now, and there's some suggestion that maybe the Galaxy are offering more money to Greg Berhalter than the U.S. men's national team program is, and there's sort of a contractual sort of situation here happening. Now, to be clear, I think Berhalter's still going to be the man, but it has to be concerning to American fans, even fans that don't really want Berhalter to be the guy. Unless you're a watch Rome burn kind of person, there has to be concern about the fact that this isn't being announced yet, because something is slowing it down. The closer this gets to MLS Cup, the less likely the U.S. is going to want to make this announcement to distract from that, right? So,
you would think.
Then Christmas, and then, yeah.
Or unless, like, the day before, to actually go to where MLS Cup will be and have that press conference right there to take advantage of the fact that a lot of journalists will be together at that moment. I don't know. But it is kind of weird that the U.S. men's national team, the U.S. Soccer Federation, has not announced their coach. We've been saying this for a year now, so it's not new. We're all wondering, well, because Berhalter is still coaching in Columbus, they wanted to wait after they're eliminated. Well, they have been eliminated for almost 2 weeks now. So they had time to do it right now, but alas. One thing to finish on USA versus Italy, Dwayne, who writes this stuff? A player called Lasagna playing for Italy. Yeah, it's not a joke. I want that jersey. I want the Italy kit with saying Lasagna on the back.
Yeah, I prefer Catalonia, or not Catalonia. That's a region of Spain. I'm going to stop my jokes now. Once I screw one pun up.
Catalonia is a region of Spain. Cannelloni is a pasta dish. You are right.
Yes, exactly. And manicotti. I like a nice manicotti stuff with a little bit of nice dill in there. It's a great little good. I'm hungry now, Kevin, yeah. And it's almost new.
Yeah, you need to brush up on your Italian. It's manicotti, but yes, I totally get what you're saying. Tortellini is not bad, but no, lasagna playing for Italy. I'm like, wow, is that a joke? Is that his nickname? No, it's his birthright name. So. Good on you, Italy, for winning 1-0 versus the United States. We'll see if Greg Berhalter actually takes the job as the U.S. men's national team coach. But if you're him, Dwayne, the Galaxy job, is it worth it now? Because you're going to have a clean slate with a club with money. Zlatan's not coming back. Come on. Alessandrini is going to be probably traded or sold for a few either money, assets, allocation, whatever. So you're going to have a clean slate with the LA Galaxy, and you can basically build the future of one of the biggest, if not the biggest, known franchise in Major League Soccer.
Yeah, well, as I said when we were talking with the Forbes report last Friday, this is the only brand in Major League Soccer that I think has a worldwide sort of appeal. I'm not suggesting it's an appeal of a Real Madrid or something, but it certainly is known around the world more than most Major League Soccer teams. So there's a certain lot of potential there. You also just look at pure like what your drive is as a coach. And I think that in North America, we hold the national team job up as this pinnacle that a lot of coaches are aspiring to. Particularly when I listen to American sources, they talk all the time about, oh, obviously, Vermees or Danny or all these youngish, middle-aged sort of guys that are doing well in MLS that they might be aspiring to Major League Soccer, to the U.S. men's national team job as their ultimate job. And I'm not convinced that's the case. Some of them might be. Some of them have said that they would like to do it one day. But I think that that's the key part of that statement is one day. Look at Roberto Mancini, the manager of Italy. Mancini has coached all around the world. He's had a club career. He's won on multiple countries. Now he's at the point of his career where maybe the national team job is the right fit. And I sort of look at Berhalter and think maybe it might also be like, I still want to coach every day as opposed to get players in every couple months. And that's a big difference.
There's a satisfaction of coaching players on a daily basis. Young players or experienced players, that doesn't matter. There's a certain satisfaction to coaching them on a day-to-day basis and seeing that progress on a daily basis too. And seeing that your advice, your direction, your orders in some case to those players will give a dividend in output of performance, of confidence, of growth as a player, as a man, as a person, as a woman. There's a big satisfaction aspect to being a coach, and on a national team level you have that, but on a very different scale, once a month, once every 2 months, and you're not there on a daily basis. You're basically more a theory. It's more like almost a you're almost like a university coach at that aspect, where you coach your theory, you put a plan into action. And it either works or you tweak that plan, but it's not on a day-to-day. You're not going to teach someone how to do a hook cross, how to do dribbles, how to do step-overs. It's not what you're there for. What you're there for is to take some pieces that you have, put in maybe in a different way, and expect this to work or not, and tweak that formation, tweak that mentality, that system of play. And for me, if it was me, maybe because I'm still there in my life, I would probably like more to mold the players the way I want and eventually get that performance that I'm looking for, which would be, at a club level, a lot more satisfying to me than a national team level. And I get it. Mancini's a bit older, early 60s. So if you want to be a bit more at home, it's a bit more theory versus practice. It's a bit more, all right, I got time to see my family. I got time not to have to travel around the world 12 months out of the year. There's a few times in the year where there's international tournament, international friendlies that travel, but most of it I'll be at my office at the training center of the national team program, and I'll be able to work on my theory of this team. So I can get it, but just for me, Berhalter, we'll see. If I'm him, which I'm not, obviously, I would choose a club.
There is a certain subsection of national team coaches, John Herdman among them, that sort of are lifers on the national team circuit because there are different skills and it sort of sits with them well. But they're, as you say, they're more like big picture kind of people, right? Like that they try and create cultures and they try and create, you know, in John Herdman's case, he's trying to reform the entire system from top to bottom. So his job's a little bit more complicated. But when you get to a big country, and I think the U.S. aspires to be a big country, you almost need that, we've talked about this before, that grandfather figure, that figure that's calming, that brings together clubs or players from rival clubs and can just...
Like Tata Martino?
Well, perhaps, yeah. And there's a lot of consternation about the fact that he wasn't interviewed. And the big issue, I think, with this U.S. hire or lack of hire 13 months after Bruce Arena walked away is that there does not to – either there hasn't been a proper search, and to be clear, we criticized the Canadian Soccer Association for not doing a proper search for John Herdman up and down and sideways. So this isn't us being like judgmental here as Canadians. There doesn't appear to have been a proper search for this job. It appears that they have a guy in mind and they're just targeted at him to the, you know – detriment of all other candidates. Or the other alternative is that there is a search going on, but it is completely closed, that there is no information, there is no openness to it. And that I think at this particular junction of the U.S. Soccer Federation, openness is something they should aspire to, because they have truly, regardless of whether you think it's an exaggeration by the fans, regardless of whether you think the fans are a little cray at times, and they are, some of them, they've lost the trust of a lot of them. Even rational, reasonable people aren't watching the U.S. anymore, and they've got to factor stuff like that in. It is important for them to you know, still grow the sport a little bit in this part of the world. So they should have been a little more open about this. Or if they're not being open and they're just being, you know, single-minded, then there's problems there as well.
You know what it reminds me of? I know it's going to be a throwback for you, but... reminds me of elementary school or high school, where you want to ask a person if they want to go out with you, so you write a little note. Will you go out with me? So the little note says, "Hi, Greg, we're USSF. Will you go out with us?" A little box says yes. A little box says no. And there's a third box that maybe. Well, he's been checking maybe for long enough now. It's time to know.
Yeah, he's got his eye perhaps on someone that's a little more a little smarter, or a little more athletic, or a little prettier, or a little
more
handsomer.
Someone more popular at school. Like, I don't know. I'll wait a few weeks. If this other person reacts to my jokes or looks at me, I'm going to send the notes to her or to him. But for now, I'm going to check the maybe box.
Yeah. It's... Exactly. You know, I want to go to prom, so I'm going to take the prom date when I can get one. But if I can get a better prom date, then, you know. And look, would you honestly want the U.S. men's national team job right now? And I'm not saying it talent-wise. It's toxic. There's just a lot of negativity around it. And I think that they do need to bring some of the older guys back in next year. And when whoever makes that decision to bring in – say Josie Altidore. We'll put Bradley aside. That's Josie needs to be in that lineup. They're going to get skewered. They're going to get ripped apart by people. And part of that's part of the job. And you just have to accept it and roll with it if you know it's the right decision. But it's not going to be pleasant for them, I think.
And so we'll see. Speaking of the U.S. men's national team job, Julian Lopetegui, the manager of Real Madrid who got sacked a few weeks ago, and the manager of Spain, who got sacked before the World Cup because he announced that he was going to go to Real Madrid, that same person contacted USSF saying, "Look, I could be interested. What do I have to do? Where do I drop my resume?" Sorry, Julian. The process has been going on already, and it's too far deep into it. We're not going to take your resume, apparently.
I guess, yeah, at this point. That could be them, you know, trying to get the contract done. I think it's going to be Berhalter. I really do. But you've got to be concerned about these rumors that are happening here. And the fact that they're not interviewing anyone outside of the United States is a bit troublesome. I don't think that's ideal. I don't think America has proven itself as a soccer power enough to be blinded by the passport when it comes to looking for a manager. And I don't think that I'm alone in that opinion. And I certainly don't think that that's an opinion that is not held in the United States by many people, right? So look, is he the right answer? I don't know. He's had a tough year. But you know, you want to look at all the options you can. I would think that Martino would be the one that got away the most. Or Rosario. You know, that was another option way back when you think about it. So there's a lot going on there.
Juan Carlos Osorio. But now we'll wrap our U.S. Men's National Team USA talk with this. We'll continue with the Osorio talk, just a different one.
Yeah, Jonathan, there's a lot of Osorios, but yeah.
Yeah, there's a lot of Osorio. That segue was right there, so I had to go for it. Jonathan Osorio of TFC is linked. Well, apparently it's not really linked. It's like, again, the same type of person asking the other one to go out with them. They're sending a little note, and we'll see what they say. Colombian club, coached by Octavio Zambrano, former Canadian men's national team head coach, asked TFC about a possible loan for the 2019 season for Jonathan Osorio.
Okay, this one strikes me as Oz trying to stir the pot a little bit. And, you know, we all know that he has a history with folks in Canadian soccer, not a particularly pleasant one. He was fired after a very short period of time as a national team coach if you've been under a rock for a while. So this is perhaps him trying to stir the pot, as I said, a little bit. Now, that said, I can make an argument that might be good for all parties involved, including TFC, because what they're talking about is a year-long loan. TFC has a lot of players that they're going to try and squeeze into the books to try and be competitive next year. Whether or not, you know, you want to prioritize another area of that lineup, because they do have a certain amount of depth in the midfield, and get rid of that salary for a year is something that might benefit them. Now, I, on a personal level, on a fan level even, don't really want to see Osorio go. I think that he's proven his worth for TFC and that the TFC is better off for him. But I could see in the front office them looking at that and going, well, you know, maybe if we take his TAM money and put it to somewhere in the back line, that might actually benefit us more, because that would, you know, they might look at Delgado, and I know there's a lot of people that don't want to look at Delgado anymore, and he's had a tough year and looked terrible yesterday. TFC might look at him as being able to bounce back and fill some of what Osorio did. They even have, you know, some other players out there, you know, in the system maybe that they could put there at lesser money and come in. For Osorio's point, and from a Canadian national team point of view, I could see maybe the challenge of going down to Colombia, but I don't know. Is the level any better? Maybe the top teams are better, but are
even
you
that,
week in, week out going to be getting better? Like, I don't know. The Colombian league is not exactly the highest league you could find in South America.
And the playing level might be sometimes better, but the infrastructure, the environment, the stadiums, the pitches, the security of certain places is not. So as much as this could be a good challenge, I don't think it's something Jonathan Osorio is looking for. I think he might still have the stepping stone of playing a few years in MLS still, maybe a one or two in Liga MX, and eventually maybe having a big club of Europe coming in or not, and just having a good career as a DP or very high tempo player in Major League Soccer, which is becoming a good possibility here. And it's a great career too. So that changed too over the last few years.
Yeah, well, he's playing at home. He's comfortable. He's making good, damn good money now. This is a guy that's going to be making, you know, around $500,000 a year. I'd have to look his salary up, but it's pretty good money. It's a TAM contract. So I mean, you know, the only reason to make that move is if you really truly want, you know, if you know that you're not going to be able to sleep at night when you're 65, knowing that you didn't challenge yourself outside of your hometown, that I really want to prove whether I could go down and do something outside of this environment. If you're driven by something like that, then maybe you might be motivated by a move down there. And it certainly would be challenging for him. And I certainly think it might help him develop as a player if he was able to overcome the obstacles there, and it would help the national team because he would be another player playing in similar environments that they're going to have to go down, just like Lucas Cavallini. I think he's benefited from playing in Liga MX. You know, they have the opportunity to play down there that helps him in CONCACAF and makes him a better striking option for Canada right now. I think the best striking option for Canada right now. So I think you might be able to look at Osorio in the same fashion and think that this would benefit him. But, you know, there's another CCL hopeful run. We'll see. You know, maybe Kansas City nips him in the butt in February. I think that would not be pleasant for a lot of TFC fans, but yeah. We'll see. And it probably will be Kansas City. It's about a 50% likelihood that they will play in SKC in the CCL. So that's not exactly the sexiest matchup. But, you know, there's opportunity, and I think TFC does also. And I don't think there's a think about it. TFC, on the record, believes that they had an injury-ridden season that was an outlier and that they can get back to being a contending championship team next year. And maybe Osorio wants to be around for that. Who wouldn't, right?
You mentioned Lucas Cavanini. We can finish the show there for today. Remind our listeners that at noon today, noon Eastern Time, 9 a.m. Pacific, U17 Women's World Cup, Canada's playing its last group stage match on TSN. So we'll be watching this and doing a Two Solitude Soccer podcast tomorrow, which you can subscribe to at patreon.com/sportspodcastingnetwork for $2 a month. But let's finish with Lucas Cavallini. He's playing for Puebla, but he has been linked with Lyon going forward. So would that be a lateral move or a forward move in your mind?
It's a tough one. Puebla is traditionally a very low-level team in Mexico that doesn't have a lot of historical success. I think Lyon is probably a bit better, so it would probably be a slight upgrade. Now, he was matched. There was briefly linked to Tijuana a week or so ago. That would be a definite upgrade. The point is that, and I think what's more important from a perspective of the national team and for Cavallini himself, is that he's wanted. He's a player that's viewed as being able to come in and help other teams, particularly team Lyon is struggling to score. So that he's being viewed as something that's going to bolster their attack. He's got 6 goals in the open season this year. That's a decent turnaround. You know, you'd like it to be a little higher, but still a few games left in it, obviously. So he's a decent striking option and someone that I think is viewed by clubs in Mexico as having the potential to bolster an attack, as I said. Now, you know, we haven't heard America or Tigres or someone going after him. That would be lovely, but, you know, he's found a level here, and it's... I really like the fact that he's down there. What my biggest hope is that he continues to be successful, and maybe he never gets a move to the top of Mexico, but maybe what he does is open the door to them, open their minds even to having other Canadians in the future go down there, because I think it's really beneficial to have CONCACAF players, regardless of what country you're from, playing in Liga MX, which right now is the best league in the nation, in the region, and that's got to help. That's got to be beneficial when it comes to qualifying.
Yeah, it's when we say it's the biggest league in the North America, it's not necessarily on the club size, not necessarily on the attendance, which sometimes it is, but it's literally the play. The level of football played week in, week out in Liga MX is higher than Major League Soccer. It's different, too. It's a lot more nervy, chaotic, aggressive, not necessarily physically, but aggressive footballistically, where the play itself will be it's nervous watching a Liga MX game. You got that little intangible, and it's more tangible, the intangible part of that league, if you permit the expression, that when you watch Liga MX, you have to learn how to react instinctively to plays because you don't have as much time before the defender comes to you, before you get double-studded tackled. So, no, I think it's really helpful for the Canadian men's national team and for Lucas Cavallini himself to continue to play. And you mentioned maybe he won't have a move to America or Tigres, but there's something to be said of becoming a legend wherever that club is, even if it's Puebla or a Lyon. If you play there, you get success and you can become an important figure of that market, of that team. Still the same to me.
Yeah, no, big fish, small pond. It's not a puddle. It's a pond. So, you know, if it was a big fish in a puddle, then I'd say, yeah, go to the pond. But if you're a pond going to a lake, then maybe that's not where the fish needs to go. And perhaps my analogy is getting a little bit in the weeds now, or in the seaweeds,
algae,
so to say.
Yeah. Stuck in the algae.
Yeah, exactly.
All right, so we'll wrap it up for today so we can go and watch the U17 Women's World Cup game. As always, you can follow Dwayne on social media at 24th Minute. Myself at Kev Larme. We'll be back tomorrow with a Two Solitude Soccer podcast for patrons only, available at patreon.com/sportspodcastingnetwork. Until tomorrow, as always, have a great soccer.
You can find the podcast version of all the shows we do on iTunes, Apple Podcast, Google Play Store, TuneIn Radio, iHeartRadio, and anywhere you get your podcast.